I am not overstating this. I can't say it forcefully enough. This is literally the end of human liberty in the West if this plan unfolds. Vaccine passport sounds like a fine thing if you don't understand what those platforms can do. I'm CEO of a tech company. I understand what this platform does. It's not about the vaccine. It's not about the virus. It's about your data. And once this rolls out, you don't have a choice about being part of the system. What people have to understand is that any other functionality can be loaded onto that platform with no problem at all. And what that means is it can be merged with your PayPal account, with your digital currency. Microsoft is already talking about merging it with payment plans. Your networks can be sucked up. It geolocates you everywhere you go. Your credit history can be included. All of your medical history can be included.
That was the voice of CEO Tech Naomi Wolf, who has been trying to sound the warning about vaccine passports now for some time. We're going to talk about that and a lot more because our world changed maybe forever. We'll see in March of 2020. And we became a fear-based society due to COVID-19. We've been told to trust the science, to listen to government, to ignore the politicization of COVID-19, and not to worry about the loss of freedom. Some say that the cure, which was mandated over a year ago and included the shutting down of society, businesses, churches, and more, has been worse than the disease. Well, suicides are up, and particularly among young people who cannot handle isolation. And originally we were asked to just give authorities 2 weeks to flatten the curve, but over a year later, we're now hearing about, as you already heard there, vaccination passports, possibly forced vaccinations, and not being able to buy or sell without proof of a vaccination. I'll read a headline about that in just a moment. It sounds like this is all leaping out of the pages of the Book of Revelation. But vaccinated people are still wearing a mask, and sometimes they are wearing two masks or three. So maybe a vaccination isn't the magic bullet we are told it is. I'm going to play just a soundbite. Well, it's a confrontation, to be honest, with Representative Jim Jordan and Dr. Anthony Fauci. After that, then I'm going to bring on a very special in-studio guest, and I'll get to her in just a moment. But here, Jim Jordan is asking the question every American, for that matter, almost every citizen of the globe has asked for over a year now.
In your written statement, you say now is not the time to pull back on masking, physical distancing, and avoiding congregate settings. When is the time? When do Americans get their freedom back? Can you put your microphone on, please?
When we get the level of infection in this country low enough that it is not a really high threat.
What is low enough? Give me a number. We had 15 days to slow the spread, turned into 1 year of lost liberty. What metrics, what measures, what has to happen before Americans get their freedoms back?
My message, Congressman Jordan, is to get as many people vaccinated as quickly as we possibly can to get the level of infection in this country low that it is no longer a threat. That is when. And I believe when that happens, you will see.
What determines when?
I'm sorry.
What? What measure? Are we just going to continue this forever? Or when do we get to the point? What measure, what standard, what objective outcome do we have to reach before Americans get their liberty and freedoms back?
You know, you're indicating liberty and freedom. I look at it as a public health measure to prevent people from dying and going to the hospital.
You don't think Americans' liberties have been threatened the last year, Dr. Fauci? They've been assaulted. Their liberties have.
I don't look at this as a liberty thing, Congressman Jordan.
Well, that's
I look
obvious.
At this as a public health thing. I disagree with you on that.
You think the Constitution is suspended during a virus, during a pandemic? It's certainly not.
This will end for sure when we get the level of infection very low. It is now at such a high level, there's a threat again of major surge.
Dr. Fauci, over the last year, Americans' First Amendment rights have been completely attacked. Your right to go to church, your right to assemble, your right to petition your government, freedom of the press, freedom of speech have all been assaulted. For a year now, Americans haven't been able to go to church. Even today, when they go to church, they're limited in the size of worshipers who can meet. Your right to assemble? Oh, my goodness. We had a curfew last fall in Ohio. You had to be in your home at 10. In Pennsylvania, you had to be in your home. When you're in your home, you had to wear a mask. In Vermont, when you're in your home, you didn't have to wear a mask, Dr. Fauci, because you weren't allowed to have people over to your house.
Yeah, Congressman Jordan.
Your ability to petition your government for a year, American citizens haven't been able to come to their capital to petition their government to talk to their representatives and freedom of the press. These very pictures that Representative Scalise just showed you and talked about, guess what? The press isn't allowed in those facilities. The Biden administration will not let the press in there. And certainly freedom of speech. Governor of our third largest state meets with physicians, and that video is censored because they dare to disagree with Dr. Fauci. So I just want to know, when do Americans get their First Amendment liberties back?
I don't think anything was censured because they felt they couldn't disagree with me. I think you're making this a personal thing, and it isn't.
It's not a personal thing.
No, you are. That is exactly what you're doing.
No, your recommendations carry a lot of weight, Dr. Fauci. We just had the chair of the Financial Services Committee said she loves you and you're the greatest thing in the world.
Will my recommendations
yield?
Are consistent.
Will the gentleman yield?
No, it's my
now,
time.
Can I answer the question, please? My recommendations are not a personal recommendation. It's based on the CDC guidance, which is
and
which
I'm asking the
underscored.
Question, what measures have to be attained before Americans get their First Amendment liberties back?
I just told you that.
You haven't given anything specific. You said we hope when this – tell me specifically.
Right now, we have about 60,000 infections a day, which is a very large risk for a surge. We're not talking about liberties. We're talking about a pandemic that has killed 560,000 Americans.
And
that's
I get
what
that,
we're
Doc,
talking about.
And I don't disagree with that. And I understand how serious that is. But I also stand it's pretty serious when businesses have been shut down. People can't go to church. People can't assemble in their own homes with their friends, with their families. People can't go to a loved one's funeral. People can't get to their government, petition their representative to redress their grievances.
Right.
I also understand the First Amendment's pretty darn important. And it's been a year. And I want to know when Americans will get those First Amendment liberties back.
I think you got the sentiment of Representative Jim Jordan, who spoke for a lot of people in the free world who have indeed lost their freedom. I want to bring into the discussion now an in-studio guest, Twyla Brace. Twyla, welcome back to Understanding the Times Radio.
Thanks so much, Jan. Glad to be here.
Twyla is president and co-founder of Citizens Council for Health Freedom that operates here out of the Twin Cities, a patient-centered national organization. She's the author of the book, Big Brother in the Exam Room, The Dangerous Truth About Electronic Health Records. She's been listed in the 100 Most Powerful People in Healthcare. Many of you hear her Health Freedom Minute on about 800 radio stations. Twyla Brace, I want to start with vaccination passports, and that was the little clip I played introducing the program. With Naomi Wolf, who's actually a leftist, but she's had it with how our freedoms are being trampled on in America thanks to COVID-19. And you write about vaccination passports. I've been all over the various things on your website, your e-newsletter. You call vaccination passports the stealth road to tyranny. That should be obvious. Many don't even know what a vaccination passport is.
Well, a vaccination passport is a digital or paper form of proof that you have received what they call a COVID-19 vaccine. And once you provide that proof, then you will be able to fly in a plane, you'll be able to go to concerts, whatever and whomever decides that you need proof of vaccination in order to engage. That's where you would have to show that digital off of your phone or paper out of your pocket. And that's what a lot of proponents of vaccination and proponents of tyranny want, is for all of us to have to prove that we've been vaccinated before we're allowed to be free. But of course, I would say if you have to prove that you are vaccinated before you can freely engage publicly, then you are not free.
You say they violate everything that is America, but that's not stopping the Biden administration from working to make them a reality. Biden officials claim otherwise, but not true. They want them, they believe in them, and they are setting the standards for them. They just don't want you to see their fingerprints all over them.
Yes, Andy Slavitt, who is considered an advisor to the president on COVID-19, he has a statement which I'm not looking at, but essentially he says we're putting out guidelines, and because of the power of the government and because we have all these huge agencies, we know that we will influence what this thing looks like. So no, it's not coming from the government, but we're going to have a big part in making it what it is.
One more clip here. Naomi Wolf continuing on these vaccine passports.
vaccine passports. I will share the warning that I've been sleeplessly sharing for about 10 days now since the Biden administration floated the trial balloon that they're going to be backing vaccine passports. And this is a global rollout. I can't stress this enough. Denmark was forced into vaccine passports. Israel was the bellwether. 4 months ago, got vaccine passports. And within 4 months, it's destroyed civil society. Activists face 360-degree surveillance. Nobody is free to challenge it. Parents are being told their own vaccine passports will be switched off unless they allow their children to be vaccinated. Of course, as I've been warning people, the vaccine passport is the social credit system that China has. It doesn't lead to it. It is that because it takes no engineering. It takes literally a flick of the back end. And I'm talking as a tech CEO, so stop me if nothing's clear, but it takes no special addition to merge your Google Wallet or your Apple Pay or your PayPal with your vaccine status.
Twyla Brace, I'm quoting a little bit from items I've taken off of your website. And you already cited this Andy Slavitt, and he's a former Obama official and now a senior advisor to President Biden on all things COVID-19, talking about vaccination passports. And he says, as you referenced, this is going to hit all parts of society. So naturally, the government is involved. But unlike other parts of the world, the government here is not viewing its role as the place to create a passport, nor a place to hold the data of citizens. We view this as something that the private sector is doing and will do. Their plan, worried about public perception that the government will play too heavy-handed a role of monitoring their vaccinations and that mandates will be coming from the federal government. The Biden administration is going to regulate from afar in a less obvious behind-the-curtain fashion. Is this set in stone and inevitable, these passports?
No, absolutely not. There are actually 14 states that in some form are saying no. Florida's DeSantis said there won't be any vaccine passports in this state. You won't have to use them for anything. We're not going to allow them. So he banned them. Montana banned them in a really wonderful, strong statement from the governor who said, we're going to protect your freedom and we're going to protect your privacy. You can't use vaccine passports in the state of Montana. Tennessee has also banned them. And then the Florida legislature actually passed it as a bill. And Governor DeSantis has perhaps already signed that bill. I believe Indiana legislators snuck it into a completely unrelated bill. So there is movement afoot by concerned legislators and governors to stop the vaccine passport.
Twyla, I'm overwhelmed with emotion, with issues, with questions, with how America has changed in the last year. Be honest, back in 2019, before any of this hit, could you picture 2020 and 2021 playing out like it is?
I could not picture 20 and 21. However, this is what I'm going to say to you. When the Obama administration mandated lied real ID into reality by saying you can't fly unless you have a real ID, the real ID could become the passport.
Okay.
So I want to tell all of your listeners that they must refuse the real ID, refuse the star card, refuse the gold card. In California, I think they have a bear on their card. Because this is the national ID, and they are trying to move it onto a digital format. Much like Naomi Wolf said, you can just switch it off. And by switch it off, that doesn't mean it's gone for you. What it means is, if it doesn't work, you can't get access to your bank. You can't get access to your medical records. You can't get access to your phone. In fact, in Minnesota in 1997, the reason I say maybe not 2021, I envisioned it because in 1997 in Minnesota, the governor offered a MIN card, and that's exactly what it was. All of these things with a third-party vendor by the government so that if you didn't pay your traffic fee, they could just say, well, shut it off, and they'll pay their fee in order to get it back on because life would come to an end. The fact that the vaccine passport would lead to that, I'm not surprised because, of course, that's exactly where the real ID is going. And all your people have the opportunity to stop real ID by getting a standard driver's license and using a passport to fly. Because once they get national ID in all their states, then they'll make everybody do the real ID.
I'm still on this article that's off of your website. It may have been in your e-newsletter because I've got notes here from both. And I'm quoting this article. It says, this is a government vaccination passport program, no matter what it's called or how it looks. The Biden administration's goal is forcing vaccinations on all of us. This is coercion at its finest. Without a passport, American citizens will not be allowed to exercise constitutional rights. They won't be able to engage freely in public life. This is a violation of all things American. And then you or someone in your staff says it's a time to protest. We can talk about that in a minute. I'm going back to the statement here. Biden administration's goal is forcing vaccinations on all of us. You and I have talked here today. You say the vaccine really isn't even a vaccine. And maybe you can explain what you mean by that, because we need to talk about this vaccine situation. Now, before we even do that, let me just say up front, look, I'm not anti-vaccine. I mean, I probably had plenty of vaccines in my life and had no adverse effect from any of them. Having said that, I don't plan to get this COVID vaccination. It's being suggested that those who don't wish the vaccine are being told that they've bought into conspiracy theories when there are legitimate reasons to be very cautious about this vaccine. So talk to me about that.
In just one second, I'm going to say why it's not a vaccine, but I want to take a moment here to just say that if you've bought into a conspiracy theory, well, 40% of the Marines have bought into the same thing. Now, Marines are not known for being stupid, and they are known for being brave. 40% of the Marines have refused the vaccine. In some healthcare facilities, more than 50% have refused. There are plenty of people all over the country that have refused the vaccine. I am not anti-vaccine either, but I am vaccine choice, and we encourage everybody to get fully informed and make their own decision, whatever that is. You have to evaluate the risk and the benefit on your own and see if it's what you really think that it will do, and then make a decision. So now, as far as the vaccine not being a vaccine, so I think this is really important because we've started to morph the words of what a vaccine is, and we did it with seasonal flu. That's not a vaccine either. The CDC talks about what a vaccine is, so the Centers for Disease Control. Vaccine, according to their own definition, provides immunity. And then they have a definition for immunity, is that it prevents the disease. You don't get sick. That is not the COVID-19 vaccine, so that's why I'm starting to call it just a COVID injection or a COVID biologic, but it's not a vaccine because even Fauci and others will say, what it does is it stops clinically recognizable disease. Those are Fauci's words, clinically recognizable disease. And then he goes on to say symptoms. In short, you can get infected, but then what they say you're going to have is fewer symptoms or more reduced symptoms. And that's why they say you can still get COVID, but no worries, you're going to have fewer symptoms. This is just like with the seasonal flu and the so-called flu vaccine. Well, that's not a vaccine either. Because a vaccine actually takes a piece of the item. In this case, it would be COVID-19, and the flu would be that particular flu. But they don't even have that flu when they make the vaccine. They're just guessing what the flu might be, right? But they don't actually have it. So that's not really a vaccine either. Just to give a better idea of why it's not a vaccine, if you get a tetanus vaccine, it's not like you get a little bit of lockjaw, right? It's that you don't get lockjaw. You don't get tetanus. You are immune. The disease is prevented. It's not halfway prevented. It's not reduced symptoms. But COVID-19, it's not prevented. It reduces symptoms.
Is it my understanding that the drug companies have zero liability if anything goes wrong?
That's correct. And that is part of the reason that it's being called a vaccine, is because as soon as it gets to the vaccine label, even though it's not been approved, so that's a good thing to remember, it's not FDA approved. It's got emergency use authorization, and they have to say it's not approved by the FDA. Once it's got the vaccine label, then they are protected from liability.
There have been some catastrophes post-vaccine. There have been deaths. There have been injuries. There have been many illnesses.
That's correct. Adverse events is what they call them.
Yes.
And there are serious adverse events that are really traumatic or all the way to death. And there have been nearly 3,900 deaths that have been reported to the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System, the VAERS system. But the CDC claims that none of those are from the vaccine. But when you read some of the verbiage that describes what happened, it's like, really? It's hard to agree with the CDC saying that, no, the vaccine has nothing to do with it because it's so shortly after the vaccine and they're perfectly healthy people.
I mean, I'm trying not to scare people. We've got listeners who've been vaccinated. They've had one and two injections, and who knows, there may be some more coming up in months down the road. How do we assure those who've had this vaccine that they ever haven't done the right thing? That's really not our goal here.
No, that's not the goal at all. And millions of people have gotten sore afterwards. They've gotten so fatigued afterwards, right? But then they're up and walking now and everything seems to be fine. What I like to tell people is the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System is there and has been there for a long time for all sorts of real vaccines. Just like any other drug, there are side effects and there are adverse events. Mm-hmm. There are lots of people who are injured and some people who die from all sorts of vaccines. The system is for lots of them, and so now this one is being added. So whatever vaccine it is that you really like and you've been glad your child had, somebody probably died from that. Somebody had adverse events, and that just has to do with how vaccines impact people individually, perhaps with their genetic structure or other things.
I want to just slip in a clip here. It's Tucker Carlson. You know, he raises a good point here. He's playing off the term that we all have heard so many times, my body, my choice. Let's play that clip and come back, and we can talk about it.
Why are vaccinated people, fully vaccinated people, being told to wear face masks? That's what we're wondering. And here's her answer.
Right now, it's very hard to tease apart who is vaccinated, where they are in the vaccination. So it's not just to protect themselves, but largely to protect others and really to protect the unvaccinated.
Oh, did you catch the last line? Save that on TiVo. Wearing masks is, we're quoting, really to protect the unvaccinated. Oh, there you go. That's the answer. And it's just as we guessed. The vaccine is now universally available. Everyone can get it. But because some people have chosen not to get the vaccine, the rest of us must continue to live as if we haven't gotten the vaccine either. That's the reasoning. Because some people decide not to wear seatbelts, you can't drive. That's just science. Got it? Thanks, Mom. So how do we fix this problem? The problem of people who refuse to get vaccinated, for whom we're pretending that we haven't been vaccinated either. Thankfully, our media were on the scene with fresh ideas about how to solve that problem. Here's the race lady from MSNBC finally putting her Harvard degree to work. It's simple, she said. Just charge people who don't get the vaccine with felonies.
Now the vaccine-resistant Trump crowd is becoming a problem for the rest of us. That's because the country is fast approaching a tipping point when vaccine hesitancy will become the biggest hurdle to achieving herd immunity. So after a while, so-called vaccine hesitancy might be better described as reckless endangerment.
Oh, wait a second, Harvard-educated race lady. Now you're really confusing us. If you've gotten the vaccine, why is other people's refusal to get the vaccine a problem for you? If the vaccine is so effective, why are the people who choose to get it mad at the people who choose not to get it? Huh? Do people who've slimmed down from gastric bypass yell at fat people on the street? You wouldn't think so. It's not really their business. Your body, your choice, remember? But your body, your choice is definitely not the standard with the COVID vaccine. With the COVID vaccine, it's your body, MSNBC's choice.
Twyla Brace, I don't know of an issue that's come along in the last 10 years or more that's been as divisive as this vaccine issue. I mean, it's separating families. It's causing divorces. What's happened?
Clearly, there are agendas at play here. And when you hear that from that woman who wants us all to be charged with felonies, right? There's something more here than safety and protection against the virus. There is about who's in control. And then there's a lot of people who are just afraid. And then there's people who are just like, I had to have it. You have to have it too. What I'm reminded of is those situations where if somebody in your little group does something wrong and you all have to suffer for it. In this case, it's like you all do not have the vaccine. And so now you're forcing us to keep the mask on. And this is building division. And at the end of the day, I feel like this is all about the government getting into a precedent-setting position where they say vaccinate and you say, I don't want to, but I have to. Otherwise, I'm going to face some penalty. Because the government has long wanted to put all of us into the place where they could tell us whatever we had to do for whatever reason and we would have to abide. That is very anti-American. And I think this is all about getting rid of the American standard of individualism, of constitutional rights, of patients making their own choice. This is about tyranny. It's not about safety.
It's about tyranny and control then. For this, we're changing the very fabric of America over vaccines, vaccine passports, masks. We get to masks here a little bit later. Over an illness from which there's a 99.8% chance of survival.
Even higher in some groups.
In some groups. This is mind-blowing that we're hearing and watching the country be reshaped over an illness that almost everyone is going to recover from, with certain categories of exceptions.
In some ways, I feel like it might have to do with the long deterioration of education in our country. about the special country that we have, about what freedom means, about individual responsibility. Freedom is about risk. In my opinion, there's actually more risk if you're not free, because then you have to depend on what other people say, what you have to do, or what your life is worth. But there are definitely risks about being free, and our education is moving the other direction, has done it for a long time. Now I think we see, what's that phrase? You sow to the wind, you reap the whirlwind, right? We are reaping the whirlwind that we have sown in this education that has not prized America and our freedoms for such a long time.
Spring break, and the nation's airlines say leisure travel has come roaring back. Passenger volume pushing 1.5 million each day this week, 1 million more than a year ago.
It's nice that at United Airlines, we can see that light at the end of the tunnel.
With so many passengers, Delta today said it will stop blocking middle seats on May 1st. But will Americans need so-called vaccine passports, proof of vaccinations, to get into concerts, sporting events, or even travel? The White House says that's up to the private sector.
The government here is not viewing its role as the place to create a passport, nor a place to hold the data of citizens.
The governor of tourist hotspot Florida says he will forbid local governments or businesses from requiring vaccination proof.
You don't want to create separate classes of citizens based on whether somebody received vaccine.
With no national standard, states, companies, and healthcare providers are now coming up with their own options. New York State releasing Excelsior Pass for people to upload digital vaccine information and COVID test results. While overseas, many European countries, Japan, Israel, and global airlines are pushing their own vaccine passports, hoping to jumpstart tourism.
In the U.S., there is no vaccination database. This is what you get when you receive your vaccine. The question is whether this is enough for a potential vaccine passport.
You've got to be vaccinated before you can become a tourist in Israel.
Yes, you could call this corporate socialism or corporate Marxism. It's when the companies become so big that they rule the roost and the government can say, well, we're not doing it, but we got our pals over here. They wouldn't call them pals, right? But that's really what they're doing. And sometimes those can be called public-private partnerships when they are solidified by contract, when the big players on both the public and the private sector work together. Some people call this fascism, when the private sector does the bidding of the public sector. And that's what we're looking at. And that's why it's so exciting to see some of these governors around the country saying, not in our state. You do not get to force any of our people to use a vaccine passport. We will not be having that. Legislators in Indiana and legislators in Florida are moving to make it law, not just executive order, but law that it can't be used.
You were telling me a little bit about the concerns of Pfizer about advanced COVID. We were also talking a little bit about animal studies. In the animal studies, we're back to vaccines here, the animals actually got worse. Many of them died.
Right. So I was reading about the clinical trials for the Pfizer vaccine, and they were talking about enhanced COVID. That's what they called it. There is a study that came out of Fauci's division, actually, back in 2012. I found that study early in these COVID times and reported on it in one of my videos that's on Facebook Live. There they were trying to find a coronavirus vaccine, and they had a whole bunch of varieties, and they were using mice. They gave it to all the mice, and then half the mice they killed. And then they checked the blood, and they found all the antibodies were there. So that was like, oh, good news, antibodies, right? And the other half of the mice, they exposed to the real COVID. At that time, I think it was just SARS-CoV-1, the coronavirus. They exposed them to the coronavirus itself, and they got deathly ill. They actually put out in the study from 2012 that they would not encourage this for humans. And that was with that particular thing. And they hearkened back to a study in the late 1960s to try to stop RSV. It's this lung infection that happens with children. And this can be really devastating across the world. And so for 50 years, they tried to come up with a vaccine. And in 1969, they actually tried it on real children, on infants. And 80% of the children that once they got exposed to the real deal, 80% of the children ended up hospitalized and 2 children died. So these researchers in this 2012 study, when they saw this happen to the mice, they're like, oh, remember back with the RSV study? And so now, looking at what Pfizer's doing, Pfizer's trying to make sure there isn't enhanced COVID. And that's what they're talking about. They're trying to make sure that people who are vaccinated, once they get exposed to the real thing, COVID-19, that they don't actually get worse. And I don't see any results of that yet, but it's very clear in the clinical trials document, which is 140-some pages long. Okay. So that's one of the things that they were worried about and trying to make sure didn't happen with their biologic.
We could probably talk for hours on the passports, the vaccine, et cetera. But when you were here in August, we spent some time on the mask issue. Folks haven't even gone to church for a year because they think they're going to be sitting there trapped in a mask. They just won't do it. I want to play one more clip of Tucker Carlson, Fox News. In this little clip, folks, you're going to hear how we've gone from some practical suggestions a year ago to utter insanity here in the spring of 2021.
The question is, why have we put up with it? We've known this for a long time. We've known it for certain for almost a year since that day last June when America's so-called public health community united as one to tell us that coronavirus restrictions do not apply to BLM rioters. They're exempt from the virus. You're still not allowed to get married or go to church or see your elderly parents as they die alone. But if you break things on behalf of the Democratic Party's power structure, you can loot the dollar store and no one gets sick. That's science. That's not an exaggeration. That's literally what they told us. And the second they told us that, we knew for certain they weren't serious. So why did we keep playing along? And that is a sincere question. We should ponder that question. We acquiesced to their power grab. So how many kids are being hurt by this? That's a question that no one asks, and we should all be troubled by a lot. A physician called Mary Harrow told the Colorado Springs School Board that, quote, the data are overwhelming on this topic. Masks, the doctor said, can, quote, cause low oxygen and high carbon dioxide levels, shortness of breath, toxicity, inflammation, increased stress hormones and sugar in the body, and create fear, anxiety, headaches, compromised cognitive performance, and other problems. Did you really need a medical degree to know that? People need fresh air, especially children. Deprive them of fresh air and you hurt them. You knew that. We all knew that. It is obvious. And perhaps because it is so obvious, anyone who says it out loud is at risk of being fired for saying it out loud. Earlier this month, for example, we spoke to a high school track coach in New Hampshire who was fired for saying it.
My goal is to get these mandates removed. And it's not just track and field. It's tennis, it's baseball, it's every outdoor sport. Masks will be worn all times, practices and competitions. Tennis, wonderful example. Singles tennis. You go watch practices, everyone's wearing masks. Competitions, they will be wearing masks, even though they're 30 to 60 feet apart on the courts.
Masks on a tennis court. Future generations will mock us for this, but we allowed it. We let power-drunk politicians wreck the country in exchange for promising to protect us from a virus that 99% of us would have survived anyway.
Tucker Carlson summarized the whole ordeal in that 2 minutes. Yeah, there are athletes collapsing on the athletic field because they're not getting enough oxygen. You and I spent some time on this last summer, but did you think it would go this far?
Well, I think once we got past those 15 days,
and
I remember listening to Dr. John Ioannidis ask, if we impose these things, how are we going to back out of them? Lots of people find it impossible to back out of them. People who are afraid now to take off their masks, they've become afraid.
Right.
They were never afraid. There was people with tuberculosis walking around, people with all sorts of conditions walking around. They never thought 2 cents about it, but now everyone is like a walking bag of germs, and they're afraid. So we have changed the psyche of the public, and it's
good
important
point.
To get the psyche of the public back to realizing that there's nothing better than free air.
But the masks aren't preventing anything to begin with.
No, but of course masks block particles. They were created to make sure that when you're leaning over a patient, for example, that particles that are coming from your mouth or your nose or your skin or whatever do not fall into the patient. But clearly the CDC says they've got no evidence whatsoever. And the funny thing about this is when I was looking up cloth face coverings, I thought, I wonder if there's an emergency use authorization. Because you know there's emergency use authorization for all of these so-called vaccines, right? So it's not actually FDA approval. Wouldn't you know, there's actually emergency use authorization for cloth masks.
Really?
But the FDA says, you can in no way, shape, or form tell anybody that it protects them at all against COVID-19.
And I know folks who have stayed home from various activities, including church, for a year because they just cannot sit and breathe improperly or even try to sing with these things on their face.
Right. The mask, I think, is several things. It doesn't do anything, right? And you can look at the statistics of what has happened to COVID-19, the cases and the deaths. in different states that never had mask mandates, or in different countries like Sweden that never had a mask mandate. There's a wonderful graphic that compares Germany, which had a mask mandate and still has one as far as I know, and Sweden, which never had one. And in Sweden, there was 2% of the population that complied with masks. So they just wore masks. They didn't have to, but they did. And in Germany, it was 86%. And the COVID death lines follow the same trajectory, but Sweden is a little bit lower. But there's the same trajectory. The mask did nothing.
Okay.
COVID did what COVID was going to do. You can find countless examples of a state that puts a mask mandate on, and then all of the cases and all the deaths just jump up, and then they come down. And people are still wearing the mask, and then they go back up again, and people are still wearing the mask. The masks do nothing, but they are a sign of control, and they are a sign to keep people afraid. I think there's more going on psychologically here and power-wise than there is anything having to do with COVID.
I'm staying on the psychology angle here. We're talking about the psychology of masks, the issues of control. And I want to play one more clip. It happens to be Dr. Simone Gold from America's Frontline Doctors interviewing a psychiatrist on the decline of human character here in the last year based on some of the issues we've talked about here for going on an hour.
I just have to open up the conversation with my friend, Dr. Mark McDonald. Some of you who are watching this have already had the pleasure of seeing Dr. McDonald's videos. He's an adult and child psychiatrist, a fantastic speaker, writer, author. He has a very eclectic background, lived and worked in Europe, Asia, and Central America, proficient in multiple languages, music, classical music, history and literature, etc. And he's just an extraordinary person to listen to. And Mark, what I'm really wanting to hear about is, from your perspective as a child, an adolescent, an adult psychiatrist, what have you noticed over the past year in terms of psychological issues that have befallen the American people and presumably people across the world?
Well, this certainly has been a lost year, but it's also been a year of tremendous change. The people that I work with and the people that I associate with have changed in many ways, and most of it for the worse. The changes that I've seen have been more anxiety, more depression, more disconnection from the people around them. Family on family conflict, children on children, teacher on student, neighbor on neighbor. What I've seen to be the biggest effect of this past year has really been a withdrawal of groups working together and an end point of individuals living essentially in isolation.
So there's been a lot of downstream effects of human beings living like that. I know for myself, I notice a lot of anger and maybe citizen policing of each other in ways that was unimaginable to the American public in the past. Is that something that you've observed?
One of the ugliest changes has been the rise and expression of some of the worst qualities in human beings. What started as essentially a state of paralysis driven by fear has really turned into a mass psychotic process where you go outdoors and people treat each other like they're living in an asylum. You see people screaming at one another, running across the street in terror when they see a human face exposed. You see people attacking one another in supermarkets for not wearing masks, accusing people that they had lived nearby and had their children play with of wanting to kill each other or wanting to act in some kind of criminal way simply for exercising their own choices and how they want to live their lives. That is a startling, frightening, and really nasty change that I've seen exhibited throughout the past year.
Twyla Brace, I think summarizing that little 3 minutes, I would conclude what's been forced upon the world is a fear-driven society.
We can all theorize where this may have come from or what this is all about. And for your listeners who have never heard of the Great Reset, There are leaders all across the globe who want a global government,
right,
and they want it to be where we don't own anything,
right,
and we are all servants. And it's big. The World Economic Forum is big people. When I was listening to that psychiatrist speak, I thought, well, that's the perfect environment to use to take over a people. Because if they have moved into isolation, they're no longer working together, friendships, divisiveness.
Right.
Now we become weak. A people divided against itself or a country divided against itself can easily be toppled. This has been very crafty and clever if it has been orchestrated, and it certainly must come to an end if we want a strong America and if we weren't a strong Christian people, because there's a definite, very negative change here, and it's happening within the Christian and the non-Christian population.
I've done programming extensively on the World Economic Forum, the Great Reset, and of course, they needed a crisis, and they got their crisis. Now, I'm not going to go down rabbit trail here and say they caused it, because I have no idea. But nonetheless, they needed a crisis. They tried climate change. It wasn't all that effective. Along came the pandemic, and my goodness, did they tap into that very successfully. So I totally resonate with what you're saying.
We won't know where it came from, but I did find a very interesting comment in one of the speeches that was published by Imprimis out of Hillsdale College, and that guy was talking about China. And I did not realize it, but when China shut down the city of Wuhan, and they shut it down, I remember the day that they did. They quarantined everyone. I thought, millions of people. I thought, how are they going to do that? But in his speech, he said, they never shut down the airport, allowing people to leave Wuhan with the virus. And I thought, okay, well, what's up with that? I don't know what that means, but I didn't get a very good feeling about that kind of a thing, where people went from Wuhan around the country, and here's where we are. And I don't know why, and I don't know if it's true, but I don't tend to look at speakers at Hillsdale as falsifying facts.
As we speak, we are hearing about the crisis in India. Our governor, Governor Waltz of Minnesota, has said, well, I'm keeping an eye on India. If that variant comes to Minnesota, then everything's going to be shut down again. We've got the sky is falling commentators about what's happening in India. Can you shed some light on what's happening in India?
I have just started looking at the data with very simplistic data. I think it's easy enough to say, and your listeners can do this too. I would encourage every one of your listeners to go to COVID death rate. Just Google COVID death rate. And what will come up are these statistics, and you can look at it for every country in the world. And then take this little point of fact that 1.366 billion people, that's how big India is. The United States is 330 million. And then just look up their death rate and look up their new case rate. And you can find that just by going to COVID death rate, and you can just flip between death rate and case rate, new cases, and you'll be able to see this. What I found in there was here we've got a country that's only a quarter the size of India, but it looks like we have had more deaths at our highest death time than India has. I think what is really happening here is that India, in being India, with a great deal of poverty across the country, with the entire untouchable class, they do not have a healthcare system that can probably deal with all of that. They don't have enough oxygen canisters. Why? Because I don't think they've ever had a really good healthcare system. So now they have a crisis that's not even as bad as the crisis in the United States, and they can't deal with it. If you look at those statistics, you'll see that they had a little increase in COVID-19 at a time where we had a really huge increase. Well, now we're just like way down, and they've gotten this huge bump. But it's being broadcast as though it were tragic, and it is tragic, but it's more like similar. And it looks to me in this sort of rudimentary research that I've done, and your listeners can look at it and see if they agree, that they haven't even had the number of people die compared to their population that we have had in the United States compared to our population.